Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello. My name is Gary Mansfield, and this is the Ministry of Arts podcast, where each week I'll be speaking to a different artist. Now let's begin by bagging these bongos.
Yeah, right. Crazy.
Hello, and welcome to episode 145 of the Ministry of Arts podcast. And we have got quite a little lineup for you today. But firstly, as ever, a big shout out to our Patreon supporters, without whom we wouldn't be able to bring you this podcast. As I've said many times before, so that we're not governed by advertisers. For over 3 years, this podcast has been self-funded. So although this content is free for everyone, if you like what you hear and want to support from as little as £3 a month, go over to Ministry of Arts Instagram profile and you'll find a Patreon link in the Linktree drop-down box. But like I just said, if you're not able, that's fine, this content is free for everyone. Today I'm taking you to meet several curators and artists, a couple of whom have got their own art podcast, and one was also a previous guest. And that could have been way back in the day when this was the Mizog Art Podcast. So first off, I'm going to take you to meet Thorpe Stavery, which comprises of Eric Thorpe and Nick Stavery. They are curators and together are also two-thirds of the Art Brief Podcast. Now, although the guys have only curated a handful of shows together as Thorpe Stavery, each has grown in size and stature, which has led them to what I can only describe as a beast of a show. It's called The Factory Project, and it's on the old Tate & Lyle warehousing site. They've involved several curatorial teams, with I think it's like 110 artists. And straight after you've heard from Thorpe Stavery, I'll be talking to three of the curators, each for around about 5 or 10 minutes. And the list of curators is as follows. Backhouse Projects, Delphian Gallery, Gallery 32, Hayes Projects, Jerome, Peishan, Recreational Grounds, Rosalyn Davis, Skip Gallery, and as well as curating the whole site, are curating their own group of artists. The Ministry of Arts is going to be part of Gallery Number 32's group of artists, and I'll tell you more about that on the next episode. And Rosalyn Davis and I are going to be in conversation, possibly on the 21st of October, although both time and date have got to be confirmed. And that is going to be entitled The Lives of Others with Rosalyn Davis and Gary Mansfield. And again, by the next episode, I'll have definite information on that. And for the next few minutes, I'm going to fill me boots and tell you about my artwork that's going to be in the Factory Project. If you've been listening for some time, you'll remember that way back in episode 104, I spoke to Catherine Borowski from the Skip Gallery. And then a few weeks later, Lee Baker. And when I spoke to Catherine, she said that she'd like me to create something for the Skip Gallery in the near future. And I mean, it's the Skip Gallery, I jumped at the chance. And it just so happened that many years ago when I was in prison, I had an idea that referenced a skip in the concept. But man, that was like over 20 years ago, so I had to try and dig out the sketchbooks to find out which one it was in. But I found it, done a little more research, and then when it came to speaking to Lee Baker, the other half of the skip gallery, I was just finishing off the finer details of the proposal. So I put it to Lee, he loved it, he put it to Catherine, and then lo and behold, a few weeks later when the factory project came about, I got a phone call inviting me onto the team. And my artwork is called Domestic Waste. Now I'd say if you've listened to at least two episodes of this podcast, you'll be well aware that my art journey started many years ago while I was serving a prison sentence. And I was in prison for several years, so as you can imagine, I've been in my fair share of prison cells. Now prisons obviously aren't designed to be a nice environment, but the old Victorian ones do have the feel of a dungeon about them. There's still a lot of these Victorian prisons that are active, housing thousands of prisoners. Most have been condemned, but are still running. But back in the day when they were built, each cell was designed for one person, but for decades now has held two. Researching for this project, I discovered on a government paper a detailed illustration of one of these cells, and it measures 1.8 metres by 3.5 metres, which is round about 6 by 11 feet. So on the left as you walk in the door is a toilet, and then a double bunk. And then on the other wall is two desks, next to which is two cupboards, which they refer to as wardrobes, and then the sink. So in reality, the guys in that cell have literally got an 18-inch strip going the length of the cell to stand up and walk. And I'm well aware that some of you may be thinking, well, if you can't do the time, then don't do the crime, and you know, that sort of thing, and I understand. But the floor space to this cell is 6.3 metres, and that's being shared by two people. And a lot of the time, that's for 23 hours a day. So to put that in perspective, next time you're in your bathroom, have a look around, because that's very possibly the size of a prison cell. And the irony of all of this is, do you know what the surface area is of just a standard domestic skip like you see plonked on someone's front drive? They vary slightly, but they are also 1.8 metres wide by 3.5 metres long. So we insist that two fully grown adults live in a cell the size of a fucking rubbish skip. Now, whatever your views are on prisoners, let's do away with that word and call them people. Living in a cell the size of a skip. Just think about that. 6.3 square metres. And to make it worse, I know we're a nation of dog lovers. I came across another government website that gave the area size for animals to be held in. And I looked at that list, and for a dog weighing over 35 kilos, which is like an Alsatian, it has to have 8 square metres. 8 square metres! Two adult humans have to share 6.3. What are the chances of rehabilitation if we are literally treating them worse than animals? So I am recreating this diagram full size on a skip. And I'm hoping that every time you walk past a skip, you look at it and think, as a society, we expect two men to live in that. And that's my installation, Domestic Waste. So a big thank you to the Skip Gallery for this opportunity, and to Thorpe Stavery for including it in the factory project. Well, that's my little rant over, but now you can come and join me over Zoom as I spoke to Eric Thorpe and Nick Stavery about the factory project. Today I'm here with Thorpe Stavery, which is Eric Thorpe and Nick Stavery. Hiya guys, you okay?
All right, Gary, thanks for inviting us on.
Oh, you're quite all right. Well, you've got quite a big show coming up in Silvertown called the Factory Project. How did that come about? It's enormous.
Yeah, it's a bit of an understatement. I think when we first found out about the show, with Project, the guys that are managing the space, they contacted us and said, "Hey, like, have a think, come and see this space. Let us know what you think." And when we saw it in photographs, we just thought, "Oh, brilliant! We'll do a Thorpe Stavery show that will fill this whole warehouse up, and it'll be this." I don't know, a bit of an ego boost, I suppose, this massive thing. like weeks went by, we got ourselves really hyped up, and we eventually went down to this space, and you realize the size of like just the complex in general, and it just kind of blew us away. And it's like, right, how can we best service this venue and I suppose do it justice.
Also, our whole ethos, or what we're trying to create around us, is us becoming a supportive entity for artists and curators and people at the early stages of their career. So we felt that sort of keeping an opportunity of this size to ourselves kind of didn't really feed into that ethos or idea. So we thought, the best way to tackle this sort of monumental space was to fill it with people that we felt were doing really interesting things, but perhaps weren't getting as much shine as they perhaps deserve. And obviously, we felt we needed help to fill it, because it is this massive, massive space.
So it's a big enough warehouse anyway, but it turns out that that's just one corner of it, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's a big complex. It was a functioning sugar factory until quite recently. The existing factory is next door. So it has these four or five big warehouses. The main one that we're using for the factory project was just filled with spoiled sugar. And it's where they would put these sort of mountains of spoiled sugar. And when we actually first went to the space, it had this layer of sort of rank treacle. And those sort of mouse traps where they have the sticky sheet and mice get trapped. And it's that kind of thing. We sort of come out of there with really sticky trainers kind of sticking to everything. But we were sort of blown away by the space. And, we were given the option to use more of it. And I felt we just thought perhaps you wouldn't be able to fill it. There's these huge outdoor spaces as well, one of which, you'll be showing work in with Gallery 32. And there's this whole other quite dramatic outdoor space at the back of the complex, which backs onto the Thames barrier. And it's, a very kind of almost sort of dystopian looking, but quite beautiful space. So who knows, if we get the opportunity to do it again at some point, we may use more of the space. But I think at the moment, we just kind of bit off as much as we thought we could chew.
Yeah. We seem to be doing okay so far, that's for sure.
There's still a lot to do.
I think that, as long as it looks all right from the outside.
We got interviewed by Trebuchet Art Journal recently, and they asked us about curation. And I was saying, I think a large part of it is spinning plates. You've got all these elements that you're trying to sort of get together and keep going until the eventual plan comes to fruition. And it's quite, with a project this size, there are so many plates and so many people involved that you're trying to, the amount of emails we're getting and that kind of thing, just because, they're all necessary. Yeah. And everyone's been great and everyone's been very good at communicating. It's just because there's so many people involved, you've got so much to answer and so much to do with the overarching project, that it was difficult to find as much time for our sort of sub project within the, our exhibition within the factory project. Which is, was quite difficult, but also it's quite nice that, we didn't, not that we didn't take it as seriously, but we were able to have a bit more fun with this, with the exhibition within the project, because it wasn't the sole focus of what we were doing. So it's, it's been a very interesting sort of newish direction for us.
It's been, I think, something that's been quite interesting for me is having, Eric and I, we spend most evenings working on this. So it's having a day that we associate to our exhibition and 4 days that are associated to the wider project, and trying to keep those, keep it kind of regimented so that you do keep on top of it, because it's so easy for something to slip and to be behind on something. And with a production like this, we've got, I think it's 110 artists involved.
Brilliant.
Every single one of those at some point has a query or a question that needs to be resolved, and we haven't always got the answer.
There are certain things that one will think the other one is on top of. And then 2 weeks later, like, right, you've done that, right? It's like, no, I thought you were doing it, you know, that kind of thing. And I think, it, you know, the key to it is communication and just being very boringly organized, you know, having everything in spreadsheets, having lists, like endless lists of stuff. And I know this kind of idea of the curator being deep in thought to these deeply conceptual ideas about exhibitions, 90% of it is admin. Yeah. And just kind of making spreadsheets about things that you need to do or remember, and, you know, working out getting artworks from artists, working out transportation and all that kind of stuff. So it's kind of
project management.
It is very interesting, but a big bulk of it is just boring admin stuff, which Nick is far better at than me, which is good. But I've learned a lot, you know, working on these shows, because at the beginning it was just, you know, we weren't aware of the amount of admin involved, really, because although we sort of dabbled in bits of curation here and there, we hadn't really undertaken
nothing like this,
big projects that we were kind of at the front of.
How did Thorpstabry curatorial team come about?
I'd written something about the relationship between contemporary art and rave culture, and why, you know, artists of a certain generation are obsessed with rave culture and da 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 da. And Chris Stead got in touch with me out of the blue and said, "Oh, I really liked your piece of writing. I'm trying to find someone to curate a show in this space. Do you know anyone?" And I kind of thought, well, is that kind of an indirect invite? Like, well, I'll do it. And me and Nick had talked about, because we were working together at Alan Christier at the time. And we'd
spend loads of time talking about shows that were happening, like younger shows or kind of sculptural exhibitions. The gallery we worked for was a print gallery.
Yeah.
But we spent so much time talking about sculpture and kind of what's happening at kind of grassroots level. And when you're surrounded by like museum quality artists, it's like you want to go against and see what's new and something that's more exciting than that. We'd always spoke about doing something, and like Eric came to me with the opportunity. It's like, oh, let's collaborate and take some steps forward and actually make.
Well, I think you saying museum quality artists, I feel that the sort of artists we were talking about, we always felt were kind of, you know, so I feel that the emerging end of the spectrum is where things are perhaps most exciting. And we felt a lot of the artists we were working with were far more interesting than a lot of the very established artists that we were dealing with at work. And we wanted to give a platform to artists that we thought needed it without the constraints of commercial bias, without them having to think, right, I've got a show in this tiny space. I need to make 8 paintings that are going to sell and fit in this space. We wanted to show big works and give the artists the opportunity to show them without thinking, am I going to be able to flog this?
That's definitely something you're doing for the factory project, isn't it?
I feel it's sort of all kind of led up to this, and it's all been we've been developing our vision with each show, I guess. And it's sort of, not that this is a sort of culmination or a kind of peak of what we're doing, but it's kind of, this is a more defined version of what we've been trying to do, I guess.
Oh, most of the curators there are artists as well, aren't they?
Yeah, actually, I think a lot of them are, yeah. I think, apart from us, I think, Delphian are both practicing artists, Rec Grounds, Rosalind. I mean, Jerome is an artist, he's not a curator. We met while we were doing Five Highs and discussed working on a show together, and I thought he'd be great to...
I think it is just us.
Well, no, Pashan's not an artist.
Oh, Pashan.
Although, you know, a bulk of the curators are practicing artists, they're also, some of them are more established in a curatorial sense than others. I mean, kind of, it's important to us to have, you know, people at different stages of their careers, although it's all sort of early to mid-career stuff. You know, someone like Pashan hasn't done a physical show of this kind, and it was very, you know, it's been great to give people opportunities as well. You know, the idea of pushing someone in a direction that they may not have thought to do is important to us. So yeah, it's a good mix of people, and I think although we have to get in there and install everything, and we don't have a great idea of how it's all going to look. You know, so far, everyone's been great.
I think with the nature of the show, like, a lot of the artists are making work specifically for the space. So we've only ever seen a sketch of it or a digital mock-up. So it's difficult to plan how it's all going to kind of go together, because you've not seen even some of the materials we've not seen. It's going to be quite challenging, I think, come Monday when we've got however many people on site plus techs and whatnot.
But it's such a large site. It's going to be nice to see the work within the curatorial group merging into each other as well.
I think that's kind of the idea behind it being under one banner, the factory project, is because there's not going to be any walls. It's not going to be like an art fair where you walk through and you go and see each individual exhibition. As you walk in to art, to every space, actually, there's more than one curator in every part of the building. So as you walk around, you'll see a different curator's idea, and in the background, you'll see another exhibition. And I think it's inevitable due to the way the building's made, but hopefully it will have a bit of a music festival sort of feel, where you might go for one or two bands or artists, but as you're walking around and you'll hear different things, you'll see different things, and you'll leave at the end of the weekend like aware of other bands and hopefully following them and seeing them again in the future. So it's having the lack of walls and having it all one factory project gives it kind of a collaborative feel, hopefully, and everyone's side by side at the same level.
Eric's just had to leave us. But Nick, as your own curatorial team, what artists are you showing?
So Eric and I were showing Mike Ballard, who's making a huge kind of 8-foot by 8-foot sculpture. Josephine Chimay is making a kind of a house type structure for us. Liam Fallon with it's kind of a trebuchet basketball type sculpture. Rosie Gibbons doing a performance, and she's got some fabric sculptures that will be hanging from one of the beams in the warehouse. Ellie Hayward, who's made a new sculpture for us. We're yet to kind of see it, so I'm not quite sure how it's going to work out. Ellie Hayward. Natalie Janula, who's doing some performances for us on the opening day and will be exhibiting some sculpture with mechanical electrical components. Olivia Monday, some paintings. Gabriella Pelzarka with big concrete cube. When you walk into the space, there'll be a big concrete cube above your head. And that'll be suspended and counterbalanced with some marble sheets. Kat Robertson, again, another huge sculpture. It's going to be with scaffolding coming away from a fire escape built in as if it's part of the building.
Nice.
Coming out into the space. And she uses a lot of papercrete, so there's going to be some, I don't know, they're going to look heavy, but hopefully they'll be a lot lighter than they are. Luke Silver, he's made us some incredible paintings. I think it's 48 in a series of, they're quite small. I forget exactly, I think they're like 20 by 16 or something like that. But there's 48 in the series, and they're all relics from a Tomb Raider computer game.
Oh, wow, nice.
So when I first saw the photo of it, it brought back so many memories. So obviously, I absolutely love it. So that's be quite exciting to have that on the back wall. And then finally, we have Christopher Stead, who is making a sculptural sound piece, which is, it's got to be, that's another thing that's going to be big. It's going to be built around a scaffold tower. So, and it's going to sit as a centrepiece to our subsection.
Well, Chris doesn't tend to do things in a small way anyway, does he?
It's big and it's loud. Yeah, I'm quite looking forward to seeing what he's done, because every time he's sent us something or spoken about it, it's always been in like a cryptic way.
You've got to decipher what it is he's going to do.
He's really hyped it up. So I know full well that everything that he does is brilliant. So I'm looking forward to see it. And also, like, when he's really capable of just getting it done.
Yeah.
So he'll come in and build this massive thing, and no doubt it will be 10 out of 10. And it'll
brilliant.
Signature piece we're expecting, Chris.
Or where is the factory project?
The factory project is in the Thameside Industrial Estate on Factory Road. The closest station is Pontoon Dock or City Airport. It's about a 10-minute walk from both stations. It's directly opposite the Thames Barrier.
Yeah.
So it's on the north side of the Thames Barrier, but it's such an easy place to get to. It's just awkward if you're if you don't know about the DLR. So it's like the DLR drops you literally outside pretty much. But if you never get the DLR into East London or you've never been to City Airport, it can be daunting. I remember the first time I went to see the factory, I was like, oh God, it's an industrial estate. It's going to be difficult to get to, a pain in the ass. But actually, it's all right. It's right by City Airport. Yeah. You're designed to get to the airport quickly. So,
yeah, so if anyone's jetting in, it's ideal.
That's what I've said to everyone. All the clients coming from Switzerland.
What dates is it running to and from?
We're open from the 9th until the 22nd. Tickets for the 9th are all but sold out now, or booked out. They're free tickets. But 10th to the 22nd, they're available, and you can get them via the website, which is inside@thefactoryproject.com.
Excellent.
Yeah, so jump on there, take a look around. There's also some workshops and bits and pieces that you can buy tickets for listed on the website, or not buy, they're all free. But they're listed on the website as well, along with timings for the performance and talks and tours that various curators and artists have taken part in. So hopefully there should be something happening every day for people that come down.
Just looking into the near future, what sorts have we got coming up?
We're hoping to have a show in August at Two Temple Place. It's kind of a stately home, a neo-Gothic building on Embankment.
Wow.
We're still talking to the charity that run the building. So hopefully that comes off, and we'll have that in August next year. Otherwise, we've got tentative plan for another October show, 2022, but that's such a long way off. I can't really announce anything with that yet. We've not, aside from one site visit, we've not really got too far with it.
Isn't it nice to be able to make long-term plans now?
It's kind of frustrating because we've had two shows postponed and then cancelled. So from February 2020, the start of COVID, from 2020, we've had two shows cancelled. So this has been a long time coming for us.
Yeah,
we want to kind of keep them semi-regularly, and you have them booked in, you kind of have a tentative plan of what's going to happen. Artists are spoken to, and then for whatever reason, business, the sort of space isn't available anymore.
Yeah.
And it's a downer. When we got this space from Project, you know, kind of like, right, let's make it happen. These are the proposed dates. It may wiggle a little bit. Once it all got confirmed, it was like, right, let's do it and let's do more.
Yeah.
we were quite lucky last year for our Freeze Week show. The day we closed was the day the government imposed like a further lockdown.
Brilliant.
So it was like, and we extended the show by a week. So it got extended right up to that deadline.
Nice.
It was a relief. So hopefully we're not in that sort of a stressful situation this time.
Brilliant. Well, Nick, is there anything you want to add that we may not have covered?
I suppose the only thing to cover is when you book a ticket, they are free, but there's also the option to pay a £2 suggested donation to Community Food Enterprise, which is a charity based on site. They're an award-winning social enterprise raising awareness of food poverty and securing food donations to supply to various food banks, schools, and care homes, social workers, whatnot. They're based on site with us. So if you are able to donate £2 to them, book a ticket that way, please do.
Oh, no, that's brilliant. Great stuff. Nick, all the best, mate, and I'll see you next week.
See you later.
Good luck,
mate. Bye.
There you are, Eric Thorpe, Nick Stavery, and The Factory Project. As I mentioned during the intro, I had the opportunity to speak to several of the curatorial teams, just to grab a little insight of what to expect. So the three I've got coming up, in order, are the Backhouse Projects, the Delphian Gallery, and I should add that Benjamin Murphy, I think, is speaking from the Delphian Gallery, which is based in Covent Garden, and he has quite an echo. He could even be speaking from the afterlife. So that's Backhouse Projects, Delphian Gallery, and then thirdly, Jerome. I'll play them all back to back and then come see you at the end. I'm now speaking to Jacob from the Backhouse Projects. Jacob, you're a part of Backhouse Projects. Would you be able to tell us a bit more about that, please?
Yeah, of course. Backhouse Projects is a bit of an interesting one, and this is actually our first project as Backhouse Projects, but it kind of consists of two separate parts. There's, of course, kind of myself and Morgan Wagner, who run Grove Collective, a gallery here in London. And then we also are working between here and Berlin, with the Berlin side of things being run by our friends Iman Hassan and Ash Smith. And accordingly, you know, this is it's really a community-driven project with an arts inflection, but we're also doing workshops and lectures out of a space that we have in Berlin, down in Neukölln, and on Basisstrasse. And Morgan and I, and in this instance, kind of I personally, are manning the arts side of things. Trying to use it as a bit of a foundation to do more socially and politically inclined work.
And how did you come to be a part of the factory project?
I initially got contacted by Molly Barnes, who's no longer taking part in the project. She wanted to do something with me through the magazine that we work on together called Soft Punk. And in turn, it just kind of the way that it morphed was Morgana and I realized that we really wanted to kind of have a project space, as it were, to kind of experiment with emerging artists and kind of our own ideas. And we kind of came together with friends in Berlin who were looking to do comparable work there. And out of that was kind of born Backhouse Projects. So in some regards, how did Backhouse come to be involved in the factory project? It was kind of created in order to be an entity that could then participate in factory project. Yeah, so it's kind of a chicken or egg thing. You know, did Backhouse come first with the factory project?
Superb. Oh, that's great. I wasn't aware of that. And which artists do you have taking part in factory projects?
So we actually have no artists taking part. Well, I wouldn't say that. I am the individual who's going to be responsible for the installation on Backhouse's behalf.
Excellent.
Which is very new work for me, but it was really kind of, you know, I came onto this as a curator, and it was a bit of a funny one because I had this idea in my head of what I wanted. And I knew that I wanted to work in a way that was referential of the history of Sugar, which I think, you know, as I think now everyone knows, having kind of been involved in this, has a rich but checkered past.
Yeah.
But also thinking about the way that that history inflected our present and ultimately our future, thinking of Sugar as kind of critical to the birth of modern capitalism, and thinking about the way that those systems have now left us on the brink of ecological and economic disaster, and thinking about how all of it kind of, yes, leaves us in the present, but also creates kind of very, very clear through lines to the future and is critical in how we kind of understand our future, not only kind of across nationalisms, but as an entire species. So I kind of had this idea and I couldn't quite come up with the right artist to do it, or I couldn't quite find someone whose work kind of mirrored what I wanted. And I realized that I was actually, you know, I was failing on two fronts, that I was both trying to curtail my idea to what other artists were doing, and I was trying to shoehorn other artists into my idea. And as a result, I realized that I would just be much better off executing what it was that I wanted to see and kind of just, you know, seeing out my vision, as opposed to trying to force someone else to do something on my behalf.
And are you able to give us an insight as to what the artwork actually is?
Absolutely. So it's kind of bipartite insofar as, on one hand, there is an installation element, which is going to be two raised flower beds with hibiscus plants. And I use hibiscus because hibiscus is a flower that's often associated with the colony of Jamaica, or with the Caribbean island of Jamaica, the former colony, and Britain's primary sugar colony. But additionally, it's going to be accompanied by an experimental essay I've written that confronts these histories and as they kind of manifest themselves again in the present and where they're leading us into the future. Although in that regard, Jamaica plays less of an upfront role. And it's actually more Haiti in the history of Haitian sugar. And as it pertains to its relationship to the Haitian Revolution, the Haitian Revolution, of course, being the only successful slave uprising in history on the back of sugar. So that kind of is a little bit more central to the essay. But I wanted to, at least for the installation, be more referential to a specific British history.
Yeah. Do you know where on site you're showing?
So we're actually going to be we're going to be on kind of one of the outside, so in the, kind of the inner courtyard. We're going to be just outside there, I think. So, it's an outdoor installation. So I think it's probably going to be in that kind of inner courtyard between the main entrance and kind of the main hall. You know, the flower beds are reasonably large, but they're not gargantuan. We need to be in a place where we can water it and get sufficient sunlight so the hibiscus plants don't just all die.
Yeah.
But other than that, you know, it's really much less a visual thing and more a conceptual kind of commemorative gesture.
Oh, brilliant. I look forward to seeing it. And because yours is a living artwork, is it moving on after the factory project?
You know, there's been talk of Tate & Lyle acquiring it for their permanent, their kind of their permanent installation there, yeah. Which is really to say that they were, you know, they're going to turn it into some center of sorts, and they were going to plant flowers. And if there were flowers already there, they might as well buy them. But I don't really know. I don't think it's going on anywhere else. It is quite site specific. But look, if someone wanted to bring it on anywhere, this has kind of been born very much of the project. So I'm open to see what happens to it. My entire identity as an artist has been forged through this project. So
excellent. All right. Jacob, thank you very much, mate. I'll see you on the night.
Cheers. Thanks.
See you later. I'm now with Benjamin and Nick from the Delphian Gallery. Hi, guys. You okay?
Hi, yeah. Good, cheers. How are you?
Oh, splendid. Would you be able to start by just telling us a little bit about Benjamin and Nick and the Delphian Gallery?
Yeah, Delphian Gallery is kind of a gallery, I suppose, but we don't just think of ourselves as a gallery. We curate shows often in different locations. We're a nomadic gallery usually, but at the moment we've got a six-month space in Covent Garden as well.
Brilliant.
Yeah, and I suppose we exhibit a lot of exciting emerging artists.
And how long have you been doing that for?
4 years now. Yep, it was our fourth anniversary a couple of months ago, so yeah.
Oh, nice. And how did the collaboration come about?
So we met years ago. I used to run a magazine, and we did a feature on Ben's first solo show. 2013, I think it was, and so we met then and became friends, and then over the years we sort of just helped each other co-curate our own shows, and then eventually thought, well, why don't we do this for other people and put on some shows. So we started with a group show at Ben's studio in Whitechapel a few years ago.
Brilliant. The perfect combination. Yeah, it's nice when things just merge into something, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, we never had any plans for Delphian, really. We never thought, right, we want to be gallerists or start a gallery. It was like we did a show, then we did another show, and then all of a sudden now we're doing like two in a week. But it was never like, you never had a business plan or anything.
Yeah. All of a sudden things just started to work and evolved into a being. Yeah, it's nice to be organic like that, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah. I think it like spawns some, it's just like a nicer way to work, I think, without sort of like overarching targets you have to hit all the time and stuff. You just do interesting shows and projects you're really excited about.
And likewise with Thorpe and Stavry, they come together in a similar way, just two friends, yeah, who started working together, and now they've got the factory project that's opening on the 9th of October. Delphian are included in that. What artists have you got under you there?
We have Jukka Vikunen, Finnish artist who's making a huge fabric piece that's going to be suspended from the ceiling.
Nice.
We've had him in a few shows. We had a big one in the Saatchi show. And then for this one, we said, like, I mean, his work is usually really big, but for this one, we said, like, make the biggest thing you've made. And I mean, his work is big. Yeah. So I don't know how big this thing's going to be, but it's going to be great.
But there's a lot of room to fill, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Like to a lot of the artists just said, like, now is the time. If you want to go big, then now is the time to do it.
Exactly.
The place is huge.
Emily making, actually, I don't really know what she's making yet. she's going to kind of finish it off in the space. That's going to be a big paper mache thing.
Well, I've spoke to a few curators, and they've said similar. They're not entirely sure what all of their artists are doing, which I think that's quite an exciting thing, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. It's going to be great on the install days to see everything sort of appearing. It's going to be great. We've got Ant Hamlin as well, who we haven't shown before, but Ben, you've known him for a while, haven't you, Ant?
Yeah, and he's just a really great guy, and we just he recently made, I think, the world's smallest hand-stitched, fully working bouncy castle. And so we had a drink with him after a show we did at Unit One Gallery, and he was telling us about that. And we thought, like, well, we've got, like, the biggest space we've ever seen.
Yeah.
Why do you make it big now? So he's making us some kind of, I suppose, three-dimensional, I don't know what you'd call them really. They're kind of paintings, but they're like three-dimensional and they're made with fabric and they're kind of sandwiched between two pieces of glass.
Nice.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
Who else is there, Nick?
We've got Hannah Lim and Hugo Harris.
Oh yeah, they're really good.
Who are going to be amazing as well. Both great. We've got Jack West, who is also amazing. He's going to be building some big stuff. Uses a lot of metal and concrete.
Are you going in as well, Benjamin?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, we forgot me.
Yeah.
I'm putting some work in. I'm putting in like a modular arrangement of like 15 canvases.
Nice.
It's going to be like on the floor. And again, don't know how that's going to look yet. I'm going to get there, respond to the space.
Brilliant. Have you got a name for your group show?
Wasteland.
Nice.
Yeah. I think it ties quite nicely with the area and with the history of the area. And it's kind of neglected the area in a lot of ways. And so I think it's really nice that creative things gravitate towards that kind of wasteland.
Yeah. Not many of the curators are aware of where they're showing. Do you know where you're showing?
We know the general area, but I think a lot of things are going to slot in amongst each other. And I think once we see what the other galleries hang, that might dictate where we hang stuff. And I'm sure we'll have that same effect on other people.
Yeah.
I don't think there's going to be walls in, well, there isn't going to be walls in the gallery, like in an art fair. So yes, I think we'll all have to be mindful of each other when hanging and installing. So we'll all have to respond to the room, I think.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really interesting to see the interplay between all the different works from the different galleries. It's going to be great.
It's going to be quite exciting as well to see how one group's work merges into its neighbour as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
With ours, we didn't try and pick works or artists that really tightly fit together and made work all of a similar style or vibe or whatever, because that in amongst a really big diverse mix of things in a room would look odd. So instead we've chose really diverse practices and works that might not necessarily sit supernaturally next to each other, because I think we're going to have enough space to that's possible.
Yeah, it will have a feeling of fluidity, won't it? It'd be less rigid. And it being so open is going to be something quite new as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be exciting.
Apart from the factory project, what else has Delphian got coming up?
So this week we've got a solo show with Florence Hutchings opening on Tuesday, which is sort of a long-awaited show because it was originally meant to open in Paris in March 2020, but was then obviously affected by COVID, so it got cancelled or postponed. And now we're showing it in our temporary Covent Garden space. So that's really exciting to finally sort of let the work see the light of day after all this time.
Something really nice has happened around that as well, because the whole show, and obviously this was, all the work was painted long before COVID. The whole show is the interior of her house.
Nice.
Inspired by a sketchbook that she made that was like a journey from her front door, all the walls back to the front door again. And then
brilliant.
The painting of like interiors and doors specifically, it's called The Doors of Perception. And so once COVID happened and we all had to like basically just stay in our houses, the show has taken on this whole new meaning, and especially the book that we made to accompany the show, because it's like, it's now a portrait of Florence's isolation during
nice.
COVID. It's really nice.
And what is the address of the gallery for anyone who hasn't been there?
Henrietta Street.
And just lastly, how's the book, How to Navigate the Art World, going?
Amazing.
And is it still for sale?
Still for sale. I mean, it's we've got a distributor, so it's for sale, not just through our website, but like through bookshops, galleries. It's like in the Tate and Waterstones. And...
Oh, nice. Nice to see it spreading the word.
Yeah. The final show of our current space in Covent Garden is a solo show with Nettle Grelier, who we've been working with for a while, and that's going to be a really nice show that opens in like 2 weeks.
And so, what's the title of that show?
That one's called Come to Good with Nettle Grelier.
Splendid. All right, Benjamin, Nick, thank you very much for your time. And nice. I look forward to seeing you at the opening of the factory project.
Cool, man.
All right. See you soon.
I'm now speaking to Jerome. Hiya, Jerome.
Hi, Go. How are you doing?
Would you be able to tell me a little something about Jerome?
I graduated from the RCA in 2019. I grew up in Shepherd's Bush. I'm a London boy for London town. Now I work as a senior lecturer in painting at Camberwell College.
Nice.
I've been painting or just doing art for however long, since I was like, I don't know, as soon as I hit double digits in age, that was like when I decided.
Yeah.
I knew that was the vibe. There's like a lot of chance in terms of chance being a key element to it. And that wasn't something I realized until last year, to be honest, when I had to break it down for another project. And I sort of realized, yeah, the element of chance is always present within my practice. But in general, I'm just really interested in approaching my practice with the openness so that it can interlink and different projects can talk to each other at the same time, and then whatever comes out. And for me, it feels most natural because there's so many sources of information that are present to us that in terms of the output of expressing that, that's just how it is.
Yeah.
And it took quite a while to kind of accept that, to be honest, because earlier on, I was kind of asked throughout my arts education, to what sort of artist are you in terms of, are you a painter, do you draw, do you whatever? And it was like, well, do you sculpt? It was kind of like a thing of all of it.
Yeah. Well, you're part of the factory project and you've got a group of artists with you.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a title around your group or the group that you're showing, which is
Play and the Post Peak.
How many artists have you got with you?
17, including myself. Yeah, yeah, it's quite a big bunch. I'll list them to you.
Yeah, go on, please.
It's Ryan Prince, Debbie Lerner, Sam Toll, Natalie Hollis, Divya Patel, Otis Blees, Eleni Papazoglu, Josh Wolford, C. Dyer, Janet Hussein, Jeanette Paris, Rosalind Wilson, Seyun Huang, Darcy Murphy, Bex Macy and Olivia Sterling.
Perfect. The factory project is a huge area.
Yeah.
Do you know whereabouts you're going to be showing?
In the big warehouse, we're in the very middle. And the way that I've curated it, basically it works out because we understand that the other curatorial projects going on, we kind of have to, there's points where they'll be overlapping. The way that the work will be displayed doesn't need like significant breathing room. In fact, the whole concept is that some of them are closer together. Most of them are early career artists that I'm exhibiting with. Man, like even with Jeanette, it's like she's, even though she's exhibited with so much major galleries, you could see her practice going so much bigger.
Nice.
And it's like, it kind of feels like inevitable.
Yeah.
And with one of the artists, sorry, that I'm exhibiting, one is still a student. And it doesn't really matter. Eventually, we're all in this thing together. We're all, and that's kind of what I was approaching in terms of the curation of the show. It's like one of the thoughts that led to it was thinking about the arts and how, okay, we're all kind of in this playground existing together. And some of us are playing different games with different rules, but at the end of the day, it all informs the energy within the same playground.
Definitely. I mean, obviously, a long-term artist, their work will show out because they've got the experience. But other than that, if it's a student that's showing quality, powerful work, it can stand easily alongside any other artist, no matter how long they've been in their career.
Exactly, exactly. And that's the amazing thing of it. The work is the work. And if it's strong enough, it's strong enough. And
if you're not familiar with the name of the artist, you take it at face value, literally.
Very true. Very, very true.
Which is pretty much how we should look at people when we pass them in the street, isn't it? You know?
Well, yeah, it's very, that same openness. It's very true because in both instances, the person and yourself are still changing and growing and moving. So there's that point in time where
definitely.
It's like, okay, we're considering this at this point, but it's still going to continue, the conversation will continue. And that's the amazing thing. In terms of the concept of the show, of my curatorial vision was mainly based around going back to the whole power structures thing. I was really thinking about the representation in London galleries thing. I was kind of comparing it to the music industry and how artists that in the 90s slash early 2000s, which is like when I was a kid growing, that's when I was born and growing up. So I was looking at hip hop and grime as the majority of my influences musically. And all the examples I saw were of these young creatives that were blocked from the industry. So they made their own things.
Yeah.
And that thought process in terms of observing like the Jay-Z at Rockefeller or the Skeptors at Boy Better Know, that is ingrained in my thinking as to like, okay, you don't really need the system. You can still do it and and make a buzz. And so as well as reading Brian Sutton Smith's The Ambiguity of Play over the lockdown, that compiled with the thought process as to what voices I see present in these London showings when they're talking about like young up-and-coming artists and what I see not present. And then also that whole playful element and looking at the seven rhetorics of play, that basically what has informed the my curatorial vision for the show. So yeah, play in the post peak. That's the show.
Thank you for your time, Jerome.
I
look forward to seeing you during the installation and throughout the time at the factory project.
Nice, mate. Yeah. Looking forward to it. Yeah, I'll see you there.
Bye. See you later on, mate. All the best.
Bye.
There you go. Look at all those curators there. The factory project sounds a little bit special, doesn't it? Well, as Eric and Nick mentioned there, the show runs from the 9th to the 22nd of October, and it's at the Thameside Industrial Estate, Factory Road, London, E16 2HB. And you do have to book to come see the show, but the tickets are free. And as mentioned there, on-site is a food bank of sorts. And when you're booking your ticket, there is an option to give a £2 donation to the food bank. And what's £2? Less than a cup of coffee, right? On the next episode, I'll be speaking to one of the participating artists. And that'll be Luap, who's showing with gallery number 32. And then a couple of days after that, I'll introduce you to a few more of the curators taking part in a factory project. So, until then, toodle-pip. Well, hope you enjoyed that episode of the Ministry of Arts podcast. If you're unable to support us on Patreon, leaving a review on whichever platform you listen to this podcast really does help us get noticed and anyone else looking for an art podcast, or even giving us a positive shout out on your social media. Anything is appreciated, but either way, thanks for listening, and until next week, ta-da.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.